and welcome to the House of Learning podcast. Richard's here.
Steve's here.
Which is him. This is I. And special guest.
Mike McGoy.
Yeah. I guess we should do introduction because people will wonder who you are. And they might have seen you around because when we had Community Sunday, you jumped up, shared a little bit about starting a men's community, which you lead. You were pivotal if you are a guy and came to the men's breakfast recently. You would have heard a bit from Mike. So people might have seen you around. What's the inside story on Mike?
Inside story, relatively new to the area. We've been here about a year and a half, my wife and I. I'm retired, long tech career. All three of our adult kids are here, and that was the main reason why we moved here, but we're loving it. And we found AJC after searching a couple churches and just, you know, kind of said, this is family. And been just getting involved wherever I can.
Yeah. And Mike is. He's one of those people I feel like is going to increasingly keep popping up. Which is very much that with Steve's MO as well. So this is good.
Mike may be retired, but you're quite busy all the time doing different things.
Yeah. But there are things that I get to do when I want to do them. And, you know, and I can pick and choose where you can't really do that when you're working a full-time job.
Hard. Yeah. But I'm so thankful for having been introduced to you. Mike's been coming to a Thursday morning Bible study for a while. It just seems and we hit it off right away. And I love the group that you've got on Tuesday nights as well, your men's group. And, you know, perhaps we'll explore some of that as we dive in
this. Yeah. And the reason we're talking to Mike is, so as I was getting to know Mike a little bit and he was sharing, I've written this book. And it's really interesting, God's timing. So, you know, we've just journeyed through Habakkuk. We're recording this just before Easter. It's Holy Week, but you'll be listening to it a week later. Mm-hmm. But we've just been journeying through Habakkuk. And one of the big themes has been God trying to activate our faith. To have this active and trusting ourselves and our things to God. There's a dynamic there. And it's a dynamic of trust and entrusting things to God and faith, but also knowing God and things like that. And then after Easter, Tim, I think, did a little prequel and said, oh yeah, we're going to be looking at some more songs of hope and just this idea of pursuing hope and what are the stories that we have and that we should tell and that we should make concrete that help us sort of get our arms around hope actually making a difference. And as we get into that, sort of trying to, how do we get hope mobilizing in our relationship with God and our heart and our faith? We're going to be doing the prayer course and thinking, what are tools that we use to sort of encounter God, to talk to God, to hear from God, you know, all of these things. And we'll get more into this, but here's Mike's book, and the subtitle is God's Always Speaking to Us, But Are We Listening? But actually the title is That You, God? So it's that question of God, you know, discovering God, engaging God, hearing from God, responding to God. And yeah, it's just sort of really interesting. Mm. Yeah, it just feels like these themes overlap a lot. And in a way, I guess it's not too surprising because they're some of the biggest questions and biggest themes of life. But I think it's really cool to have Mike, you know, because I don't know how long it took you to write this, but you've published it recently.
Published it in October of 23. Started writing it probably in 2010.
Okay.
And put it on the shelf for a number of years, you know, that fear of failure and no one's going to want to read this. And, progressively just every now and then hearing God's voice again saying, hey, finish what you started. Yeah. And, so that was a consistent theme that finally took 13 years to finish up. But,
So in a way it's there's something about this project that Mike's been engaged with where he's kind of gone full nerd on some of these questions in his life and his story. And so, yes, feels like a really good opportunity. Yeah. I think either reading Mike's book or just like catching the storyline behind it and how these themes have sort of shaped you, Mike, because you've been thinking about how to bring this all together.
Yeah,
I think it's a really good example maybe for others to encourage them as we're all wrestling with bringing it together with what God's doing in our church. Like, he's talking to us about this stuff because I think he wants to grow us and form us in these ways. So, yeah, just felt like God's timing, you know? So it's a really cool opportunity.
It always is his timing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So tell us a bit about... So 2010, so that's a long time ago, right? So feels like there's a story.
What prompts?
There's a story behind the story here, right? So what's the storyline? Like, why bother to write something? You know, that's always an interesting question when someone takes on this challenge of writing a book.
Yeah, so in my younger days, I've been told by people all the time, oh, you're such a good writer, and I like, you know, not really, you know, that self-doubt kind of thing that many people have. And I can't honestly say what started me down the process, because there are other books that I had started and stopped over the years. But, you know, I think it was really God's prompting that just, you know, made me, when I'd put it down or stop working on it, would just draw me back to it. You know, I might be on my computer doing something and all of a sudden I'd look at, you know, one of the folders and go, oh, there's the book, right? Oh, I better, you know, I should open that up and start working on it. So, yeah, 2010 was a period where I was probably pretty far along in my walk. Maybe in 2002 is when I really had hit bottom and came crawling back to God. And I talk about it really as a surrender. Mm-hmm. God, I've spent the first 45 years of my life trying it my way, and all I've done is made a mess. My wife was ready to leave me. My son was, I figured he hated me, and we were never going to have a relationship. And just things were not going the way, you know, the American dream tells you they're supposed to go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And So that was 2002, 2003. But by 2009, 2010, you know, God had really gotten me back to a place where life had meaning again, and had rescued my relationship with my son, rescued our marriage miraculously, and I just was at a point where I want to give back. I want to help others experience the healing that I experience through God. And one of the things that came to mind was, well, tell it in a story. Tell your story, and hopefully other people can gain some hope or some understanding from that. That's really, as I began to write, really believe that what I had come to understand was that our stories are so similar. I mean, we were all born in different places to different parents, but the brokenness of humanity, it's the same for all of us. And so I was able to see that how God rescued me and built me up, brought me back from the depths, so to speak. And I said, I want to be part of helping people do that. So yeah, that's kind of really how the book kind of started, took shape.
That's really cool. I want to ask another sort of meta question, because I'm just thinking, a couple of Sundays ago, Tim was talking about Habakkuk. He went through these experiences of being shaped and finding hope and all this stuff, but then he writes a psalm, and it's sort of you can see how producing this psalm is a product of what God's done in Habakkuk's life. But it sort of brings it all together in a way that Habakkuk can now bequeath it as well. So I'm just interested, you know, you've written about a long period of your life and what Jesus did. But what was it like actually like the process of then going back and writing and considering and because you've not written a song like Habakkuk, right. but you've written a story, yeah, kind of thing. So it's like there's a similarity. Yeah, just wondering, like, how did it affect you and your relationship with God and all these things, just in the process of even writing? Because you're, in a way, you know, if this had happened in a different order, we could say, oh, yeah, Mike's done, like, what Tim said and what Habakkuk exampled. So, yeah, I feel like you're the modern example.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, couple ways of answering that is that I think, you know, God was there pushing and prodding all along. And as I began to as I started the writing process, I realized I had maybe four or five stories in my mind, and of times where I was sure that that was God speaking to me. But as I started writing, I'm really like, oh, well, but then there was that other time and that other thing and that other thing and that and begin to be like, he's always been talking to me. He's always talking to me. And I thought, well, I'm nobody special. I mean, you know, billions of people in the world. But we share that common thread that I mentioned a few minutes ago, the brokenness that we feel, the those questions. Is there more to life than this? What is this all about? What's my purpose? And so as I started to piece the stories together, I thought people will be able to relate to this. And
I love just even your comment, and that comes through. You give a lot of examples in the book of this, of just your attentiveness and your willingness to hear and engage with God. And you, like you said, a few minutes ago, you said, I just realized that God has always been speaking to me. And so that's encouraging to hear, I think, as we go into, if we look at our circumstances and we might have the approach of, oh, I wish I could hear from God.
Yeah.
And even that statement, even this, the title of your book says, yes, and we can. Yeah. That's true, but yes, we can hear from him. It's, are we listening?
Right. And I make a statement early on in the book where I say something to the extent of, you know, God's always speaking, but we're, most of the time we're not listening. And I include myself in that for many, many years. And I don't always hear his voice. But, you know, I said something to the effect of what I experience, what you'll read in my stories, it's really kind of simple. What you need to be able to do is just to suspend disbelief or what's the word I'm thinking of? You know, to be able to say, like, well, maybe that was God, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, oh, that's just a coincidence or, mm-hmm. yeah, that happens to everyone. It's like, no, if you don't even believe that it's an option that God is speaking to you, then you're never going to hear his voice. Mm-hmm. You know, people will say things like, oh, that's a coincidence. And I actually spend one or two chapters talking about, no, this is a coincidence. You know, this is not a coincidence. This is, you know, God moving in the world around us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really good.
Well, I always remember as like a newer Christian, you know, just even learning that hearing from God or praying and seeing an answer to prayer was a thing. And some guy being like, yeah, I don't know, like, could be a coincidence. All I know is the more I pray, the more coincidences I keep seeing.
Yes.
There's a correlation. Yeah.
Love that. Yeah. Love that quote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, I don't know, just because I'm, you know, I've got where we've come from at AJC with Habakkuk and where we're going, like engaging with hope and prayer and just thinking, you know, what would it have been like for Habakkuk if he hadn't have been able to pray and hear from God? Because he was just facing like despair and discouragement and confusion. And you talk about hitting rock bottom as like a turning point. And I think sometimes our turning points are pain, but sometimes they're just disorientation. They're different forms of pain, or, you know, we're built with this understanding of like there's something like qualities that life is supposed to have, that it's designed for, like order and flourishing and things like this. And so those moments where we encounter the opposite of that, they do push us to want to answer those questions.
Yeah.
And, you know, and in a way, it's like taking us 8 weeks to go through Habakkuk.
Mm.
But, you know, you talk about the simplicity as well. Like, it's not overly complicated. And this is something I think we're going to see in the prayer course, is there's like, there's loads of varieties of ways you can pray.
Yeah.
But at bottom, it's a really simple thing.
Yeah.
You know, and really, you know, through all the complexity and the different layers of what's going on, Habakkuk's just going, ah, and then, God, what's going on? And that's just a really simple, natural thing, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, there's something sort of accessible about this. Is not like, you graduate to master's level Christianity or something, you know. And that's the interesting thing as you like talk through your story, is it's not. I think people might imagine a story of like, yeah, kind of bumped into God a little bit, maybe dabbled, grew, you know, and then like eventually I've realized like, oh, God's doing stuff and I can interact with him. But actually, this story is different.
Yeah, very.
It's that realization punctuates and it actually creates momentum and movement and change in your life.
Yeah, no, people use the term hit upside the head with a 2x4. And I use that a couple times in the book because it's really, that's what I've come to understand about how God communicates us with us. One, it's very specific and it's geared just towards us. Like if Richard or Steve, you heard the same message that I heard, it wouldn't mean anything.
Mm.
But the fact that I go like, oh, wow, how did you know? There are times when God is whispering in our ear, right? And there's sometimes where we're just not listening. He says, all right, you know, here you go. Here's the 2x4, whack. Now are you ready to listen? And I think I've experienced that throughout my life. Less of the 2x4 in the last, you know, so many years. It's a real thing.
Because God's gentle and kind, he doesn't like using it.
He doesn't like using it, but he uses it
as needed.
When he needs to. Yeah.
So, like, I mean, I don't know, maybe there's like a story that will come to mind, or maybe just like talking about it more abstractly. So, engaging this faith, like, oh, you know, like you say, like bringing my disbelief down and being open to like, could that be you showing me something? Could that be you revealing yourself or, you know, telling me something, God? And I don't know, it's just sort of faith and God's input and hope sort of getting mobilized. And you talk about, like, the transformation in your life.
Yeah.
So, like, how does this actually make a difference? Like, how does it actually change things?
Well, I think when we are willing to suspend our disbelief and say, you know what, maybe that is God talking to us, and we're open to stepping out in faith. You know, just put your toe in the water, and God will not necessarily, you know, magically bells and whistles and fireworks like, oh my God, wow, I put my foot in the water and this thing happened. But there's reassurances and little nudgings that say, okay, you took the first step, and now watch what I'm going to do. And there are a couple different stories where I talk about making some really hard decisions and just at the end feeling like, no, God, that's part of God's plan for me.
Yeah. There's something interesting in the midst of that where you talk about like the first step leading to more. That's a really interesting, because I think sometimes if we have our Habakkuk moment where we're like, okay, God, I got to ask, you know, the crisis moment, our expectation can be like, I need like a burning bush or like an angel or like, let's part the sea. Like, you know, I need like emergency sort of interaction here. But there's something as well about, God creating that curiosity and like helping our baby step of faith become a little bit more and become a little bit more. And rather than bewildering us with something that would overwhelm us,
yeah,
you know, and maybe not actually lead to the development of a relationship, but maybe would leave us like profoundly marked, but unsure what the next step could be because we're not in crisis and there can't be another emergency kind of intervention by God as the next step.
Yeah,
most steps don't look like that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So there's just something important about like the small step and the nudge and the whisper. Mm. And I think sometimes we're not excited about those things maybe, but it sounds like you've grown an appreciation to see why those are actually really important.
Yeah. Yeah. So I interestingly, one of the stories I tell is about I was visiting an old college friend down in Southern California, and this is a guy that was quite the part. Well, we were all quite the partiers in college. I was part of a fraternity, and he had in the years since we had left college, gotten married and divorced very quickly, and was just, you know, he was an alcoholic. I guess technically he's still an alcoholic. But he found Jesus. He went to church. When I asked him why, he said, "Well, to meet girls." I said, "That's okay. He doesn't care." and my big brother Rick, he would call me every 3 or 4 months and would just hound me with scripture, and I'd be like, "Thanks, Rick. Thanks." Anyway, we're down in L.A. visiting, and I go out to his place to have dinner, and we had a very engaging conversation, and you know, it was, I didn't feel like he was browbeating me. And when we got done, I said, "Well, Rick, I need to get back. My wife was over at her aunt's house." And I get in the car and I bow my head and I just say, "You know what? I want to believe what Rick is telling me. I want to believe all these things." So I get on the road, get on the freeway, and I didn't close my eyes because I was driving, but I said a silent prayer. I said, "God, I want to believe in you, but I need a sign." And literally, and I mean literally, you know, milliseconds as I come over the top of this hill on a road I've never been on, there was a big lighted cross on the hill. I mean, right in front of my eyes, and I thought, "Okay, thank you, God. Yeah. There's a sign." But to your earlier question or point, it didn't radically change anything. I just kind of kept going with life. But that was something that I put away in my memory, like when I did start writing the book and when God did get a hold of my heart, it's like, "Oh my God, that time where he put the cross right in front of me," right? And some people go, "Ah, that's a coincidence. That cross has been there for, you know," but at the exact instant that I made that prayer, that's not a coincidence.
Mm. No.
Yeah, Mike, I love what you're talking about this. As I hear you express it, this notion of suspending disbelief, I guess I interpret that and hear that as you've got this attitude now of this sort of expectant watchfulness. And I just flash back to our teachings that the team has done on Habakkuk and standing on the tower. The wall, waiting.
Yeah.
And just there's a difference between starting with cynicism and trying to put that aside versus starting with optimism and really this expectation, anticipation, hopefulness based on what you've seen God do in the past, expecting him to continue to be who he says he is and show up. And I think it strikes me you're more in that camp than I'm trying to put away my skepticism. And I've just watched you do that in a bunch of different things and some of these stories that comes out that way. It's funny, I had my bookmark was on that exact story. Oh, okay. with Rick in here. And your book's really approachable to just kind of get through there and just, like you said, just hearing from a guy who said, "No, this is how God's shown up in my life," yeah, over and over again.
I guess in some ways it's like making our peace with the risk.
Mm.
Because to believe that that's God and then respond as if it's of God, it's God, requires risk. And this is maybe why, like, the, not innocuous, but the smaller scale, you know, interactions where God's, you know, he's not telling us to, like, go fly off a cliff, but he's just doing, like, a 1 degree course correction or something on something, you know. Is because I think it'd be really hard for us to jump off the cliff.
Mm.
So, like, faith formation begins with being able to, like, and this is a similar to suspending disbelief, but it's suspending risk aversion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a close cousin in some ways. So being willing to risk that, like, well, part of how I'll find out if this is God is also by seeing what happens as I'll respond.
Mm.
And you know, there's, I think we sort of learn, like, oh, it was, and we see the fruit of it. As, but we also learn, oh, I was wrong about that. That's okay. It's not disaster.
Yeah.
Because we're not, we don't always just, you know, get it right all the time, you know, like a burning cross on a hill just at the right time, just in the right place. Like, it's pretty profound, but you know, like, oh man, my Bible fell open and I just happened to notice that word. Like, is, you know, is that God, or is that, you know, or that that cloud sure looks like a, you know, like, there's other things you may be less sure, you know, but I think it's like, we don't want to be cavalier about it, but we also don't want to be so overwhelmed by, like, well, I can only risk if there's, like, so many things stacking up that me suspending my disbelief is really just, like, the straw that breaks the camel's back. Mm. Then, I don't know, there's, like, there's not much trust in the process of believing God can show up and speak in all these variety of ways and things like this.
Yeah, I think, you know, what my experience has been is that, you know, to your point, it's like we start with by stepping out and we get a little bit of a sign or we get some indication, and but it's and then we move on. We continue with life. We continue with what we're doing, and then we get another one and another one and another one. And I think what I've experienced over the years is that as I've the more that I'm able to rest in the notion that God's got my back. God has a plan for me. I'm able to just say, you know, the faith, the trust comes a lot easier when you've seen it play out over a long period of time, right? I don't know if that makes sense, right?
Yeah. What I hear you saying is when you've seen over time, it's these things that may seem risky, I think, is always mitigated by God showing up in the character that he says he is. It's in ways that's, it's not, he doesn't show up and doesn't speak in things that would be contrary to his character. And the more of those little steps we take, the more affirmation we receive of who he is, of the genuineness of his character and the example of his character showing up in that time where you need him. And it doesn't have to be these, it can certainly, but it doesn't have to be huge and like these mammoth things. It's sometimes just in these small things.
I think that's so important. Like, it's one thing to have faith and trust someone and then risk something based on them saying something. But you can just, someone meets you in the street and is like, hey, would you be willing to sign over your life savings now to this investment? You'd be like, I don't even know you.
Mm-hmm.
And so part, and I think God understands this, which is why part of God's strategy in constantly being active in our lives is to make himself known.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that when maybe a moment of risk comes, there's some reassurance and like, but I know the person saying this.
Yeah.
And I don't just know about them, but I experientially have like seen their character show up in the ways they've interacted with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. We just had this conversation in my men's group the other day about, and I don't remember how it came up, but it said, hey, you know, when you see a homeless person on the street, do you automatically just give them money? Most people say, no, I don't. You know, you don't know what they're going to do with the money. They could be a drug addict or whatever. And I say, you know, I firmly believe that the Holy Spirit tells me when I need to reach out and help someone, right? Mm. We can't help every homeless person on the street, but every now and then, you know, it's like the voice that says, yeah, go ahead. This is a good one. And so by being in tune and open to the idea that God is communicating with us, we can look at a situation and say, okay, yeah, that's, and Steve, you made the point about God communicating to us in his character. You know, he will never communicate in such a way that we're like, well, that's confusing. I mean, that doesn't sound like God, but it's, and so when we do have these promptings and we go, well, this is a good thing. This is, you know, I'm helping someone that, you know, whatever they do with the money, that's between them and God. It's not between me and them. Right. I'm not to judge them. I believe that's the way, you know, he works with us in those small moments, those small things. I kind of was chuckling a minute ago, you know, this idea that, that everything that happens in our life is a direct action that God just took. You know, my wife and I always joke when we pull into some place and there's a parking spot right in front of us, like, oh, that's a God moment. You know, God provided that space. Was like, no, he didn't. You know, somebody pulled out in their car and we just happened to be there. And so, you know, discerning, is this really from God? Because we do have voices in our head. One of the books my men's group went through talked about the different voices that we have. Satan is clearly one of them, the world system, our broken, our sinful flesh. But then there's the Holy Spirit. But how do we discern? You know, I feel like I'm led to do this, rob a bank. Well, that's probably not the Holy Spirit, you know, talking to.
Certainly not.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I like the story as well of, like, you know, imagining you're driving, you pull up to lights, do I help this person, you know? Because I feel like part of why we have disbelief or caution or risk aversion is sometimes like, well, it's about control. Like, I want to be sure that I'm sure that I'm sure.
Yeah.
And what happens is the more you realize there's so many open questions, like, that posture will eventually just immobilize you. You'll never stop the car and help anyone because you can never be certain. So, like, life requires some risk, the living of life. Like, and there's something about the life of faith where God's not just trying to mobilize us to do the extraordinary, but also trying to help us flourish in the ordinary. Mm. And we kind of need it.
Yeah.
We need it because that voice of fear, which the enemy and the world and our brokenness really good at inflaming, and the voice of shame, and, you know, all of these voices, I don't know, it's very easy to have this narrative of, like, the alternative to listening and responding to God in faith is just like, well, I'll just do it by myself. And it's like, that's not really the story of, like, well, I'll flourish, but maybe not as much. No, that's a story of, like, you'll dwindle and fade.
Yeah.
And so, like, the alternative is not what we sometimes think it is, you know, and how this, you know, dynamic plays out, which I'm sure you've got stories,
dozens,
but, you know, of that as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you talk about your rock bottom moment, but there's another story of, like, how do you end up there?
Yeah.
You know, what are the dynamics and voices that led to that moment as well? Because that's sort of the other side of the mirror.
Yeah,
of that moment.
I think too. You know, in all honesty, much of my understanding of God and His voice is based on looking backwards at, you know, well, I was here and this happened and I stepped out or I didn't step out or I made a choice that I wasn't sure was, you know, really coming from the Holy Spirit and this was the outcome. And so So, you know, what do they say? Hindsight is 20/20. But I think what I have experienced is that when it is God speaking and I do step out in faith, that his promises are there, you know, like Jeremiah 29:11, you know, my plan's not to harm you, but to, you know.
Mm.
And I think something that you said a few minutes ago, Richard, kind of stuck with me, and that is that when we're listening for God's voice, again, my experience and my perspective is that we also have to understand that the answer we get back may not be the one we were looking for, mm-hmm. right? And when people talk about God's plan for my life and that sort of thing, sometimes people get frozen because they're not sure if they should go to this church or that church, or send their son or daughter to this university or that university. It's like God can work in all those things, and there's no wrong answer. There's no right answer. God will work in all of that. And so I think oftentimes when the fear that people have is, well, if I attribute this to God and it doesn't turn out well, then I guessed wrong. And it's like, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
You made a choice that maybe was wrong, and the consequences turned out really bad. So
yeah, and I mean, I've talked to especially a lot of young people, you know, like college age people, and I love to ask the question: if you get it wrong, but you're trying to hear like what God's got to say, and you're trying to respond with wisdom and faith, and you get it wrong, how do you think God's going to treat you next? Like, is our God the kind of God that's going to be like, well, you're on your own, stuff you then?
Yeah.
Like, that's just not our God, you know? So in a way, there's this safety net of, like, we should be maybe adventurous. We should be free to be adventurous with our faith, which I like.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think another thing you're talking about, like, these moments where it's not what we thought, or, like, we're like leads to some confusion or maybe even doubt or, you know, things like that. Because, you know, you're writing the book, and it's a sort of cumulative story of your faith's journey, of your hope's journey, of your ability to listen and respond journey. Is it linear? Because like you were talking, Steve, mm-hmm. about how like prior moments contribute to the next.
Yeah.
But does that mean it's always like a bigger step and a bit clearer and a bit easier?
I sometimes think of it or describe it as like the conga line, right? Two steps forward, one step back. Two steps forward, one step back. And that doesn't mean that, well, you know, God was really good to me for two steps, and then he punished me, and that's why I fell backwards. No, I made a decision, and it didn't work out the way I had hoped or wanted it to, and that's the step back. But God continues that dance. He continues the conga line. Just keep stay in the line, and we'll keep moving forward.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. You know, one question I have, because as you at the men's breakfast, you gave this great encouragement for people to share their stories, which is what you did here, and I'm so thankful that the church is well put together. You know, as we go into Easter,
we got another crossover. Look at this.
It's amazing. And
it's almost as if Jesus has some sort of plan.
So those are great stories. Your book's good. I'm also curious, because we see in Habakkuk, he's commenting and really lamenting to the Lord about what he's seen has been happening, but he's also hopeful in the future as well. So my question is around the story that God's continuing to write in your life, and where especially as we see as we're approaching Sunday, and so for your listeners, we're approaching Easter.
Right. Yes,
even though
you'll be looking back at Easter,
you'll be looking back. But where are you clinging to the hope that God's provided throughout years of him showing up in his character? And how is that hope drawing you forward into an, you know, evolving story?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think it's just what how I've experienced God and the promises that He makes, and what He does when we're faithful, and the fact that He doesn't punish us when we when we're not faithful. We just have to deal with the consequences of being unfaithful. I don't know, built up a big enough body of work that when something does go wrong or is not quite the way I was hoping it would turn out, I don't go to that place that I would have 20, 30 years ago where it was like, oh my God, you know, Chicken Little, the sky is falling and, you know, my life is over kind of thing. It's there will be setbacks and it's not always going to look like I want it to or think it should. But there's enough a big enough body of work in my life that I look back on and go, oh, holy cow. I mean, if you had told me 20 years ago that I'd be sitting here, you know, doing this, I'd be like, you're crazy, never in a million years, yet here I am, you know. And so I think it's just, you know, just building on my experiences. And because He's faithful, because He never changes, it's not like all of a sudden one day He's going to say something that's going to throw me away, you know, He's going to throw me under the bus, because that's not the character of God. He will continue to be faithful. And so I need to continue just to continue to, I probably said that five times in one sentence. I just need to push on with trust and faith.
Yeah, and there's something, I mean, the New Testament uses this word perseverance a lot, but there's something, or enduring, you know.
Romans 5:8.
Yeah, it's just sort of interesting. I think maybe it's that control muscle again, of we just think, well, surely if I can just get my head around it, I can just become the person that will then flourish in what's the next season requires, or the next challenge takes, or something. But maybe we need to have a little grace with ourselves about, you know, there's a long-term journey going on. Like, God's playing the long game here. And so often we're sort of caught up in our momentary, immediate challenge or question or something like that. And what we really want is resolution.
Yeah.
But what God actually wants is maturity.
Yes.
And it may be more complicated as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking a little. Yes, that's so good. I was also Tim's words from his teaching this past week, this notion of trusting in your trembling, rejoicing in your wrestling, standing in your suffering. I know, I just know those circumstances kind of have confronted you. And I see you doing those things because of how God's shown up and spoken to you, and that affirmation and that resounding experience of having met the living God in who He is, in His character, that He is someone you can trust, that He is someone you can rejoice in. That He is someone who will stand with you in His strength.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's some of the reason you wrote the book.
Yeah.
Is to sort of take your reception of that, but then make it available. So I kind of want to give you the last word on the podcast.
Okay.
And I feel like it's actually very similar to the first question, but I think it's a good place to finish with what you just said. Like, where do you hope, or what difference do you hope it will make if someone listens to the podcast today or reads your book? Because like Habakkuk, you produced something because of what God did, but you've put it out there in hope of something, you know? So like, what's your hope for people who listen and read?
My hope is that that the people that read the book, assuming they enjoy it and they got some out, we'll pass it on and it will just multiply, and you know, tens of thousands of people will be able to experience my story. Not for me, not as a, you know, good job, pat on the back. I've probably spent way more money than I've taken in, you know, in terms of book sales, not a problem. That was never my goal. My goal is that they will look at this and go, you know what? This is a regular guy who dealt with a regular stuff, and through my story, through the, you know, the sort of the beginning to end, although it's not ending, is that they'll say, maybe there's hope for me. Maybe I need to start looking in a different direction. Real quick, and I don't know how much time we have here, but my son, who we could never get to go to church, he's 33 now, never could get to go to church. He wasn't against God or, you know, but just not his thing. And he had he wouldn't even read my book. I gave it to him 3 months, 4 months ago, and he hadn't read it. His flight got delayed. He said, I brought my book with me. I probably wouldn't have read it, but my flight got delayed, and I ended up reading the book beginning to end. And he's all, and I started to realize that, wow, maybe God's talking to me, and maybe I'm not listening, right? And then he went off to visit some family in California, and a bunch of things unfolded to where it was like, wow, yeah, God's moving, God's talking in my life right now. And that, for me, that I would hope that other people would sense that. I read the book, and it gave me a sense of hope, and it gave me the, I'm not sure the word I'm looking for here. I'm willing to be open-minded about it, you know?
Yeah. I love that. I love that question. Like, is there hope for me? Yeah. Because it's a regular story.
Yeah.
But the hope is also, there is hope for you. But there's the kind of hope for you where you could end up with the kind of story that's also worth telling.
Mm. Absolutely. We all have stories.
Yeah.
We all have stories.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that's awesome. I hope you're encouraged. And yeah, hope this helps sew together some of what Jesus seems to be up to at our church. And yeah, put a little extra fire under it. And yeah, look out for Mike. Read the book and, you know, go ask him questions about all the stuff he's saying in there. He'd love to chat to you.
Thanks for coming on, Mike.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me.
All right. God bless everyone. Welcome.